Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and I have an invitation in living mythology. Olympian star seeds are embodied reflections of Olympus's light that have chosen to drink the waters of forgetfulness and enter the dream of mortality to assist in the great awakening on Gaia. The Olympian Star Seeds Initiative, which I'll call OSI for short, is tasked with locating and liberating incarnate Olympians ensnared by the dream of mortality and reminding them of their Olympian mission. The OSI, mindful that archetypal Olympian patterns have been programmed into the human psyche, believes in assisting all people on Gaia with actualizing their maximal potential. The OSI supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. Tonight, on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm honored to announce the intergalactic mission of Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. Greetings, Mark and Phyllis. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. We're doing great. How are you?
Happy New
Year. I'm doing fantastic. It is so great to be speaking again, even though we spoke the other day. I enjoy speaking with you guys so much, and the time goes by so quickly.
That's for sure.
That's great. Yeah, it does. We miss talking to you, too. It was great.
Now, last time you guys were on, you gave an overview of your mission and how you manifest your work into the world. Since then, in reading over things that you've written or that have been written about you and your artwork, I'm amazed at the multidimensionality of all that you do. So today I figured I'd get a bigger overview beyond the things that involve UFOs. And also we had a great conversation about devas and elementals.
Yes.
And that's a world that few people know about and fewer people talk about knowingly. So today I'd like to get into those as well.
Oh, fantastic. That'd be great.
Now,
wasn't expecting that this time, Hercules, but okay, that'd be great.
In my view, creativity is one of our most divine functions, in that we take something that's in our mind and we make it real in the physical world. And that's, if that's not divine, I don't know what is. And you're both very creative. How did you first discover your creativity and tap into it? And what type of things have you done with your creativity?
It's a good question for you, Mark.
Let's see. Tapping into the creativity I had, I came with art. I'm self-taught, and I usually draw and or see in my mind what I've seen in space or other places, or what I see around me, like nature spirits sometimes are running around, or my wildlife and horses and things and animals. So I draw from the reality that I see. And I can imagine things, too. You know, I can make up a creature if I want and all that. But usually what I'm trying to do is show the people as much as realistic as I can. I like to do more realism. But to show the fairies or to show the nature spirits or Pan.
Extraterrestrials.
And extraterrestrials, right? Or my friends in
angels.
Space. Oh, yeah. Of course, angels. Yeah. Physically met angels. My own guardians. And we had an incredible story where my guardian angel brought back Phyllis's briefcase that was lost in a taxi cab.
Oh, wow.
Very small. You know, it was a couple of years back. And she returned it because there's a whole way we can do this and talk, but it's a long story. But there's a way I talk to the angels and I can tell people how to do this with prayer and working with them, but not tonight. And asked her to do this, and she did. Next day, she brought the briefcase home at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. That's a special time for us anyway with threes. The doorman met her. She gave him the briefcase. So it's like our doorman, who is about 6 foot three roughly, but if he has his shoes that are heels, he's now taller, right? So he's got maybe two, he might be 6'4" and a half or five. when you meet him. So when she came to put the briefcase on the desk there and gave it to him, show him this card that was my name on it, she said, give this to them, and then handed him a card that Phyllis had printed for me that few day, or a couple days ago, before that, I mean, and she had an envelope. So she had my name on a card, but said, give this to them. And she could have just opened the briefcase up, and my information was right there for Phyllis. So the doorman says, I'm trying to make this fast. He says to her,
Thank you.
Who should I say?
Our conversation will be ongoing and will last for a very long time. So please take your time.
Okay. All right.
Do it faster.
I'm going to do it fast. So
okay.
He says, who should I say brought this in case they ask? And she says, Angel. And he goes, Angel? Like Angela or Angel? And she said, Angel. Then she leaves to go out the doors. Now remember, when angelic people, when the angels come in, they only stay for a few minutes, maybe 15 minutes at the most. They hang with you, maybe 20 mm-hmm. minutes, and then they go and they dematerialize. So she starts walking out of our lobby and into the courtyard area, and she's walking, and he once again he goes, says, but if they ask me, is it Angel or Angela? And he's inside the doors, and she's in the courtyard area, walkway, 15 feet to the sidewalk or so. And she turns and smiles, points to the sky, and says, an angel from God.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, okay. Turns around. She walks up the steps. We have three little steps on to the sidewalk. Walks in an angle and dematerializes.
Okay, she dematerializes.
She's
wow.
gone. And he came out on the sidewalk to look, and there's, of course, no one there, he thought.
The beauty of this story is when Mark went downstairs to get the briefcase.
Yeah, he says to me, Mark,
he was in a state of shock.
He was like in awe. The eyes, you know, your eyes are wide, like something just happened. And he says, Mark, I just met an angel. I said, I know. That's my guardian angel you just met. And he says, oh, Mark, do you believe in angels? I said, I just met my guardian angel. And, He says, she went out there and she's gone. And I said, yeah. So I walked up and I said, I started laughing because there's nobody on the sidewalks anywhere. And anyway, it's just someday we can get into that one another time. But there's no way she could disappear that quick if a human. She would have walked through cars to get out of the way because she made an angle towards a tree and cars, but you couldn't walk between their bumpers, big SUVs.
The beauty of it. So, he was standing there eye to eye with this incredibly perfect.
So I was asking, exactly, Pookie.
It was beyond perfection, and he had never seen anything so beautiful before in his entire life.
Right, because I asked him to describe her, and he described her perfectly. Blonde hair down to her shoulder blades. He couldn't describe what she was wearing. He couldn't remember. She said he was wearing white. So I said, what color are her eyes? He says, most beautiful blue I've ever seen. I've never seen a person that looks like this. I've seen a model, but I've never seen a human that looks like this. The eyes were large, and the skin was flawless. So he's going on about that. And then I asked him, how tall was she? And he goes, oh, my gosh, I was looking directly at her eyes and her face, and she's as tall as me, or my gosh, you know. And I said, what was she wearing? That's when I asked him what she was wearing. And he said, Mark, I can't remember. She was wearing white, but all I could see was the love of God coming from her face and her eyes.
Oh, wow.
That's all I could focus on, was love coming from her face. I never experienced anything like it, he said. A person interviewed us one day separately a couple years ago, and they were doing some kind of little documentary, and I got his permission. So she came, interviewed me upstairs, and went down. He was downstairs, doorman. So she went and interviewed him separately, and our stories, of course, matched. Because they always want to be sure about that.
Yeah, of course.
But this is the first time. I get a magazine called Angels on Earth from the day it started back in the 1990s. And I've never read a story, anything like that. Usually the angels will not tell you they're an angel. They kind of give you a hint, but they never tell you anything. They'll smile. They might say, well, when angels help you on a highway, like they helped Phyllis and I. We've had a few. I always say, can I give you something? No. Can I offer you this? No. It's not what we do, or it's not what I do. And why are you out here at 3 a.m. in the morning on a highway alone, you know, the angel rescuing us? And he said to us, that's what I do. And so we watched the car drive away.
Wow.
The truck was a big truck. Drives away and fades into the distance. Just fades away and melts.
Gabriel?
Yeah.
With the horns?
Yeah.
We had been stranded for a long time. There had already been one miracle where Mark, some people that were very...
well, we prayed and it was cold.
One group showed up in kind of a big car, but they looked like they did not have our best interest.
Oh, you want me to tell that story? That's a good story. This, we got stranded on the road up in the Croton Falls area of 684.
Uh-huh.
We were coming back from Connecticut, and we got a flat tire. So I'm going right to the side of the road, and I know the road because I've been there, and that's where I come from.
No jack.
And I had no jack in the trunk, which I thought I did, but it was a different car I used to have. So I'm like, oh, great. Because I could change the tire, but I don't have it. So we had a passenger, Phyllis's sister, and we had luggage because we came from Connecticut, and we were staying at the weekend. So here we are, 3 a.m. in the morning on the highway, stranded there in the cold. So we had to keep the car going on warm, you know, with the lights flashing and everything, praying. We prayed, and we said, don't worry, something will happen. There was no cops. We didn't see anybody. So a car comes in the distance and pulls over slowly, and it pulls up in front of us about 2 car lengths ahead of us, okay, roughly about 2 car lengths ahead, pulls over and is up there. Now, nobody gets out of the car. So I'm thinking, that's not a cop. And I prayed, and we said, angels protect us, and the crew, my friends and crew. I said, they monitor. But I said, angels, guardians, protect us. We're here alone. Guide us, okay? So I got out of the car, said, lock the car. Phyllis locks the car. And I went over to them, and the angels telling me, my guardians, they're telling me, caution, don't go up to the window. So I went, stayed back by back end of the car, let's say. It was a 2-door car. But in the back seat, there were 4 people in the back seat and 3 people in the front.
You mean 3 in the back?
Maybe it was 3.
Maybe it was 3.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking 4. We had the large car. Yeah, it was something like that. This is a car from the 1980s, and we had a big Grand Marquis, and that could sit 4 people in the back seat easily and 3 in the front. Huge car, and travel like a cloud. Yeah, so they pulled up in a big car too. But when I look back and think now, Phyllis is right. You could see silhouettes in the back seat, but you can't judge. But there was definitely 3 people in the front seat because I could see them. So when I stood off to the side, roughly 5 feet away from their car, and off to the side towards the back of the car, and the guy rolled down the window in the front on the passenger side, and I said, do you guys have a jack? Because I have a flat. And the kid laughs at me. These are kids, too. They're in their 20s. And he laughs at me, and he says, yeah, we got a jack. Like that.
Oh.
And I thought, uh-oh. I didn't get a good vibe. And then he looks to the other kid, probably one of his driver, and they're talking about something, and I'm waiting, right? And they seem to be bantering. There's sounds going on. I'm thinking, oh, jeez, are these kids going to try to do something?
Mm-hmm.
He turns him back, and I said, do you guys have a jack? Because if you pop your trunk, you want to help me, I'll just do it myself, and I'll give you a jack back. You know, and he looks back to smirk at me. He did something, and he looks back, and all of a sudden he does a double take. It was like he looked, laughed, and all of a sudden he looked to his friend, and he double take back again, and his eyes went wide, and his mouth went open, and he's looking up over me, past me and up over me, and he hits the kid in the middle. I could see him swing his elbow into the guy in the middle.
Oh.
Look, and the guy's leaning over. I don't think the passenger and the driver saw it, but the guys in the back seat, somebody saw it. And they look like, oh, my God, get the hell out of here. They went like that. And they peeled out, leaving spattering gravel. And I'm just standing there going, wow.
And I watched it, and I thought that was rude.
It was weirdest thing you ever saw. And they go out the road. And they're zooming away. And I turned around calmly, and I just looked up behind me. There's nobody there and nothing up there. And I said, what did you guys do? Manifest a giant Bigfoot? Manifest giant space police? What the heck was behind me that they looked up? They looked up. I'm like, I'm not tall. Hercules, we never met yet. I'm like 5'3".
I feel like
I'm sure
you
like 6'2". But they looked way up over me as if 8 feet people were behind me. They looked up, and I was like, what the heck did you do? And they said, well, we showed them. Don't mess around with us. So they must have been a vision of something, either like a giant angel. I don't know what they visioned, but to see the fear on their face, I was like,
wow,
Bigfoot?
It was definitely not from Mark.
No. So I go back to the car, and we get in, and Phyllis is like, what happened? What is that about? I said, well, I'll just say they didn't have a good intention, you know, and the angels chased them away. So we pray again. We all go, okay, Yehoshua, Jesus, you know, creator, angels, can you guide someone towards us? St. Michael, archangels, you know, guide someone to help us with a jack. Or if you want to help us, send you guys.
This is before cell phones?
This is way back.
Pre-cell phones.
Yeah. So finally, another car within 5 minutes or so, we see a car in the distance coming towards us on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull over, and they're in a white car. And to this day, can't remember if there was a license plate that you could see, you know, on the back of the car, like New York, I don't know. They pull up, and I got out of the car again, go over. And I said, hi, do you guys have a jack? And now there's three guys in the back seat, two guys in the front seat. And they get the guy in the, they go, no problem. They said, I got a flat. They said, oh, no problem, we'll help you. Now, these guys look like the college big football guys, a.k.a.
Uh-huh.
Angels in disguise, okay? Do you remember that guy walking out of the car? It's freaking cold out, and all I see is a guy in a big T-shirt. Do you remember that guy?
Yeah.
The driver? He gets out in a white T-shirt, you know, jeans or something. The guys in the back seat, they stayed. But there wasn't too many people in the back seat, really, when I think back on those guys. It was definitely the two guys in the front seat that got out, and then there was another two guys at least that got out from the back seat. So the two guys, or two or three guys, okay, I'm having a little problem now because I wrote this up, but at least two guys got out from the car that went to the back of our car, and Phyllis's sister got out of the car, and all the luggage was still in the car. Everything was in our seats in the back. Everything was there. The guy that was the driver comes over to me. We opened up the trunk. You know, I had a tire pulled out and all that, and he comes over. He goes by the tire with me, the back tire. It was the back tire on the passenger side, just so people know. That's the tire. And the two guys that got out of his car, they all have these white T-shirts. And you think, what is this, a college frat party came out? But it's freaking winter. There's snow on the ground. These guys are in T-shirts. Not normal, right? And they're all cute, tall, nice and muscled dudes, like you would think of angels. So they get out. They get in the back of the car, the two guys. And they lift the car up.
Oh,
wow. Two guys lift the car up. The other guy, who's the driver, he undoes. I had that tool, you know, the wrench, the thing that opens up, you know, the lug nuts. Lug wrench.
Uh-huh.
Lug nut thing. And he spins it, and he's getting the tire off within seconds. He's got it all down, right? Pulls it off like two hands. Pulls it off. Me, I'd be struggling a little, picking it up. He pulls it off, puts it to the side, gets the other one. I just roll it over to him. He puts it back on. He's going to tighten it up. And we're talking, right? And I said, I'm so happy you guys are out here. And maybe he said, it's what we do. And yeah, they always do that. It's what we do.
It's what we do, yeah.
So he's tightening a lug nut, right? And I said, can I tighten one of those lug nuts so I say I at least helped? He laughed. And he says, sure, here. So I start tightening one, and he gets up. And he says, that's it. You're okay now. Everything's fine. And the other two dudes, they lowered the car.
So remember, there still was no jack.
No jack.
This was done by with manpower.
Right. I mean, they said,
the car. That's amazing.
RC, right?
Well, with the other one, with the black, the gray one.
The Buick.
A Buick LeSabre. That's
so
huge.
It was a gigantic car.
It was a Buick LeSabre.
It wasn't a...
No, because this was a different car. But it was gigantic. You know those big long fronts and the big long backs of those cars in the 80s? The big, big Grand Marquis and LeSabres, they were all Buicks. They picked that thing up. We had luggage in it, stuff in the back seat. And to see these two guys just walk over and go, whoop, and they're holding it up.
Wow.
So even our sister, Phyllis's sister, was like, oh, okay. You know, so when they're done, they're going back to the car. Their car, and I followed the driver, and I said, is there anything I can do? Can I offer you anything for help? He says, no, not necessary. So I said, okay. You basically were sent by, in my head, I'm thinking, these guys were sent. because they look exactly like you would expect. Blonde, tall dudes, dark-haired dudes, beautiful-looking kids. They look like they're 20 at the most. But they all look like they worked out, you know? And they're all over 6 feet tall. Every single one of them was over 6 feet tall. So they get in their car, and I got in the car with Phyllis and her sister. I'm going to say her name. And I get in the car, and I said, watch. Their car drives off. They fade away into the sunset there because they're angels. And we're watching them drive on 684. And you can see them go. They go, and all of a sudden, meep, they disappeared. They faded away. Mm-hmm. Not on the road. I mean, they faded. Their lights just shut off, basically. So now we try to start the car because it's been sitting there flashing and being had the heat on. When they were changing the tire, it shut it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in the car. We start the car. Nothing. Battery died.
Ooh.
So we're sitting there like, oh, here we go again. So now it's like 3:30 a.m. or whatever. And we're going, okay, Yehoshua, Jesus, Yahweh, Creator, guardian angels, you see what's going down here, my crew and friends. Can you guide us again, send somebody over again, send another angel or something to help us now get the car started? But you know what I need now? A truck. Because this big, long car, you need a big car or a big truck to start that big car.
Yeah.
Right, you know that, right? Like, well, I'm like, oh, now I need a truck. So we're waiting.
Well,
not even
they're responsive to you, though, and that's a great thing. You know that they're listening.
Yes. Oh, you know, just don't doubt. They're right there laughing with you because it's like, oh gosh, here we go. But this is the fun part. This is the fun part. You just expect it. Expect the miracles. They come. They do send them.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay. So we got our sister and us, and we just go. Okay, please send help. We need now a truck to jump this car. So we wait, not even 5 minutes. Not even. I'm looking in the rear view wind mirror to see what's coming down the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing on the highway. Nobody's driving anywhere this early. And so we're looking, and all of a sudden you see white lights in the distance and glowing lights all around this car. I said, Phyllis and her sister, can you see that back there? That looks like a spaceship coming down the highway.
It
looked like a spaceship from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
It was unbelievable. It had so many lights. And then when
all over it.
And when it pulled up, it had horns all over it.
And he honked the horns. Coming over, he honked the horns. So whoever's driving up and hear all these horns honking. You couldn't believe it. It was not like something from the 60s where I'd hear the kids down at driving with a musical horns, you know, even my Puerto Rican friends I had back in the 70s, they had those funny horns. They would all be singing horns or something. This was like horns. The cavalry came.
Seriously.
So this car pulls up, this truck, as it's coming towards us, we're laughing because you cannot believe what it looked like. It had running lights that I've never seen before.
We've never seen anything like
that. You see running lights on cars that look like the tube lights, the little lights on them. This had inch or bigger lights, boom, 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 all around the bumpers, all around the details, all around the front of the hood. The grill would have been a grill.
Mm-hmm.
Around the hood and up in the center of the hood at the front of the car, like when they put racing cars together, they put these soup things in there to get air into the engine or something. That had a thing on it that had two horns on it. These horns were like 11 or 12 inches long, like Gabriel's horn. Or they were horns.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
And on the front of the center of the hood.
And you've never seen anything like it.
I got to tell the rest. So, you know the sides of where your windshield is attached to your car, and you got the coming up where your mirror might be on the left or the right?
Uh-huh.
In between that part where your mirror is on both sides of the car, to the hood of the car, and then it goes over the main window, the main front window, were little horns.
Oh,
horns
wow.
Going up the right and the left side, what are those, like 5 inches or more? Like that, 4 to 5 inches long, little horns. They look like trumpets. That's what they look like, little trumpets without the buttons on top, just horns. And there's a row of them going up the passenger side and the driver's side hood to the top of the roof and going across the top of the roof over the main window, the front windshield. So you have horns like that, horns down the side, two giant horns in the front of the hood in the middle, and horns on the top where you would lift it up, lift the hood up.
I think they were trying to give us a message.
And lights. The running lights were the funniest. Lights under the car for fog lights. There were more running lights. There were fog lights under the front bumper, but there was more running lights under the bumper. And we're laughing. So when he went side, when he pulled up, there were running lights where you'd step onto the car to get into the car.
Mm-hmm.
There were running lights all around it. They're detailing the whole truck. And it had big wheels. That's the other funny part. It had big wheels.
And
the wheels were
the
almost as big as me.
When they didn't know about cars or, you know, because basically, again, as you said, they manifest, you know, they come in and out of being. So this is how they appear to you. And that's quite a show to put
Isn't
on.
Isn't it funny?
I'm
friends with Gabriel and
form that appear in antiquity. And like you said, with the trumpets, the horns being like trumpets, that's part of angel lore. So that's how people would interpret it in antiquity and these stories that survive. And now you brought up an important point, and Phyllis did too, in terms of what is the relationship between the angels and the space people?
Oh, I can tell you a lot on that. I'll finish this quick story, though. You're going to laugh with this one. Okay. Oh, so you get out of I got out of the car to meet with him. And I have giant jumper cables that work with big cars.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I got these jumper cables. And he says, don't worry, I got them. So he brought giant jumper cables for the truck. And I had the hood up. And he's got like a little bit of he's dark-haired in this guy. He's not a tall dude, but he's funny and lovable, totally funny and lovable. And as he drove up towards our car, the horns were all honking. All these sounds were coming out of this truck, and we were just laughing. Who the heck does? And when he pulled up again, I said, there was big wheels. They were those four-foot-high big wheels. Like you couldn't look over into the passenger door to see anything. A lot of times people have had experiences where they looked into the truck because they were tall guys, and the angel was helping them with a tire flat, and the guy wandered over just benignly and looked into the passenger window, and there was no dashboard. It was just light.
Wow.
So assuming, and the guy kept reaching into the truck to pull things out of nothing. And when he looked in there, there was just light. So there was no bottom to the back of the truck. So I'm assuming this is happening to me, but I'm too short to be able to look in there. So I just talked to him, and I said, well, thank you so much for coming by and being here just on time. I just did a prayer. And he's laughing. He's just making, he's comic. He's laughing. And he's putting the thing there, okay, start the car, do this, and it's all working. And the horns, again, bizarre. But I said, thanks for being out. You're on the highway? And he said, yeah, this is what I do. They always say that. This is what I do. And I said, well, there's no one else on the highway. He says, yeah, but I do this. I rescue people is what he's saying. But I do this. So I offered him, I always offer them money just to see what they'll say. I said, can I give you something for your trouble? Can I help you with this? No, put hands up. He's walking towards the front of his truck. He says, nope, this is what I do. I don't accept anything. Nope. I said, not even a glass of water if I had it. And he said, nope, nothing. So he takes his jumpers off. He says, okay, keep the car going, rev it a little bit, but stay in it for about, 10 or 15 minutes, and then start driving home, get home, and get home safe and all that. So he gets back in the truck. And he starts leaving, and he honked, right? And did he do, I think he did one more honky thing with the horns. It was just bizarre. And he waved to us, and that was it. He's gone. And we're sitting in the car revving it, and our sister and everything in the car, and I said, watch this. This one's definitely going to disappear because this is not an Earth person. And he didn't get very far. His car disappeared. His truck just disappeared on the highway. And there's no cars anywhere. So that was our experience, and that was Gabriel is taking on a form for us to play.
That was 3-4 that night.
That was good. And he was average-looking guy. He didn't look like an angel. He didn't come in as Gabriel. But I knew who he was because I kept smiling. And Gabriel is very funny and comical. So I know him on the other side.
Gabriel the angel.
Gabriel the angel and Michael and the other ones. But Gabriel's known to be very funny. Michael's funny, but Gabriel's pretty funny. He does jokes. He's funny. So I figured, well, who else? Him and his horns. He's always joking about the horns. He used to tell me these things. So whatever message. I've never seen a truck dressed up like this before in my life, anytime. So that was our story with Angel, the Gabriel and the other angels that helped us that night. But when in space, we come from where I come from, the, over the 12 frequency dimensions. We call them dimensions and planes.
Yes.
The angels work with us, and we work with them. Because even though they are from Creator, the first creations they were substance from Creator as well, the same type of, we're soul, but they are a different frequency of substance, and they are a separate being, totally. They're not humans. So they will take on the forms that they need to work with us or other aliens and space people in space. They take on forms that are acceptable. So they know we're human-like, so they come to us as the human-like that form that they are. But it is an archetypal image that they use in space because it's ancient, very, very billions and billions and billions of years. Galaxies are older than people think, you know, the omniverse and universes.
And gone to the frequency, you
know. So I'm just giving the archetype that we see in our mind is, or the one that we think, like these 12, 15 foot tall, 20 feet tall. These beings are huge, and that's when they finally try to come in, but that's to help us. So my angels, when I've seen them, they're as high as the ceiling, and the female, she's about, that's the one who brought Phyllis's briefcase back, her name, my angel. I don't know if I should say her name, but I named my cat after her, one of our cats we had. So she's very tall on the other side when you get to see them out of the body and all that. But when she came in, she was almost, they try to get to average heights for humans, you know, but sometimes they can just be taller than 6 feet. So as a girl, as a female, she came in and she was taller than 6 feet. My other male angel friend, he comes in over about 8 feet. So he's always as high as the ceiling if I've seen him in a hospital or wherever I saw him, different places. So when I'm out of body with them, I'm that high. I'm tall like they are. So they're always my height and taller, which is 8 feet and 9 feet, and they come in at 10 or so. So in space, though, we gain different height. I try to explain this to people in different ways in our lectures, but if we're working with Earth, if we're out of body and working around the Earth plane here, and we're working around humans that are out of body too, people, we will stay in a range that's easy for them, 7 foot, is my limit. I can't get lower sometimes, 7 feet and 8 feet, and when I'm out of body, not in this body I'm in, but my out of body of my other, myself, when people have met me out of body, I'm not Mark, I'm my counterpart of myself, my true self. So on the higher realms, as you get going into the higher frequencies over the seventh dimensional planes, you get to eighth, ninth, tenth. These are cosmic levels and universal levels and levels that are not around planet Earth anymore, any planets. They're in the space planet. They're into space.
I think you might want to just define that levels, basic levels 1 through 7 are, you know,
the ones around the
circle, physical planets.
Right. Each planet, and like the moon, even though it's not a planet, or any these solid planet systems, like we're on the lowest plane right now, the first plane, we call this the first plane, which is the densest frequency of physical realities.
Not the third plane.
It's the first plane. And when we're here on a physical planet like Earth or any other planet, Mars or something, there are 7 planes of frequency representing, in a way, the same way humans have an aura.
Right.
And in our aura are different frequencies too. So the planet has its own energy field that is now part of, we would say, the planes around the planet systems. So when you're out of Mars or Jupiter or Venus or anyone, if you are on their dimensional space around that planet visiting out of body, and you go over towards like a fifth dimensional plane on that side of that planet, you'll be meeting up with space beings and other people from those realms there, and as souls, other space beings. And you'll see around that planet, Jupiter or Mars, their frequencies of their planet represent imaging around Mars. Like Earth plane represents imaging around Earth.
Yeah.
So you see future cities or past cities. You can go to different things in Kaishikli around the first planes of the Earth that have like past 1800s or let's say 14th century, you can go and visit these places on the frequencies around that planet you're in or visiting. And it's usually around the out of body. People can go out of body and go visit another past place that they feel too. They can do that. But it's third and fourth plane where you can go really into seeing things and what your life was like at another time if you were on Earth as a reincarnating 2,000 years ago, 500 years ago. You can actually see these patterns and you can go watch and be part of it. Because I helped Michelangelo, but I was not... this is my first time here, but I'm physical to be born here. But as friends of other beings that we know from different times and space as well, I know the soul that became Michelangelo on Earth. So I was friends with him. And I said, I'll tune into you once in a while, because he was an artist. So I tuned into him, and I was working with frequency to help him with energy, just guiding, just being there with him as a strengthener. You know, because he has, remember how he was tireless with tireless energy?
Yeah.
He would be up. That's why we would help, like the angels help, or I was his friend. So I said, I'll stand by. And I stood by him when he was carving David. And it was in the 10th grade when I had a total vision sitting at my desk at school. Total vision. I was not here at the school. I was gone. And my teacher had just put something down on our desks. And I wasn't looking. I was at another book. And all of a sudden, a white flash hit me, and I was back in that time. And I was standing with him and hovering. I was hovering behind him, and he was chipping away. And I was close up, chipping away at the ear of the statue, the right ear. And he was on a ladder, and I zoomed in. And I realized, oh my gosh, it's, and I was with him, and I can hear him thinking in Italian. I was translated to English. I can hear in my head English being translated from Italian. And so anything he was saying, I understood him. So somebody was calling to him, and he looks down to his right, and he was chiseling, and I could feel as if I was superimposed with him.
Mm-hmm.
I felt I could feel his energy in him. I could smell. I don't know what marble smells like on Earth physically, but I could taste and smell marble and felt it hitting his face, which I felt reflecting onto me. It was a bizarre feeling. And I could see his hands chiseling. And I was thinking, good ear, clear, really good. He's doing this really good. And someone's calling to him from the right side on the full ground in Italian. And I heard the translation. And they said, the Pope, it's like the Pope, whoever was Pope at the time, wants to know when you're going to finish this statue. And he looks down, and I see what, from his eyes, I could see a teenager looking up, like a page, a teenager kid, you know, like 14, maybe. And he's looking innocent, like, he wants to know. And he looks and he says, tell him when I'm finished, I will be finished, you know. And I heard that in Italian. And then the kid goes, oh, yeah, yes, he runs away. And then he turns, he's chipping away again at the sideburn of the statue. And he's thinking, this will be my greatest work.
And he's
in
right.
Italian, I heard that. So I hovered backwards and hovered away. And I'm hovering, and I'm seeing him. And I said telepathically, I said, "You're doing this is a great, great piece." And I just sent love to him, lots of love. And I feel that's what we were doing. You come and you help when you see the inspiration, the art going on. You're helping just with love, and that gives them energy to have chisel more faster or whatever he was doing. He was really having a good time. And it's not the first time I was seeing him in different other things that I never had proof of what I saw or what I heard until I got a book years later, a little book, and I was looking through it, and one of the books said Michelangelo thought that David was his greatest work. And I was like, well, that's what he said. also, I was behind him when he was riding a horse another time.
Back
in 1972, I hadn't out of body, lucid, let's say lucid out of body, and I woke up with the whole thing I was doing with him, where I hovered and came over a guy riding on a horse on a cobbly stones, and I thought, huh, what's this? So I zoomed over, and I realized it was Michelangelo. He's riding on an Arabian horse. So I zoomed in, hovering behind him, and I'm watching where I'm going, where he's going with the horse, and I see a building, and he turns the horse to go towards a building. There was some barn and stuff in this building, and he got off the horse, and this young guy came and took the horse and brought it into a barn, a stall, and it had ropings to, so the horse wouldn't come out. It was with ropes and a netting, like a rope made into net. And I was like, what the? You know, because I worked with horses, but I never saw this before. So he's talking to the kid in Italian, and I'm kind of hearing him take care of him, you know, blah, blah. He's just doing a regular thing, and he walks to go out, and he leaves, takes a left, and goes back to the road to go to wherever he was living at the time. And this horse, I remembered, was an Arabian dappled gray, more white with dappled gray. And I thought, what a beautiful horse. So I thought, I didn't know Michelangelo had a horse. So I went to look at a book I had later. This is when this book shows up. I went to a library and found a little pocketbook. I still own these books. It was like the life of Michelangelo in a small little, like 5x6 book, tiny little paperback thing. And so I started reading it because I thought, what am I? I'll just start reading it. And when I started reading it later, I came days later to a part in the book where it talked about him living in the town where he lived and in a house on the street, and there was a barn down the street, and I went, what? And he kept a horse there, and I was like, what? And then I find out it was an Arabian. It was gift by one of the Medici's. Yeah, a daughter or somebody loved him and liked him, but he was bisexual, mostly gay, I think, bisexual, but she had a crush on him, I guess, somehow. Anyway, somehow he gets this horse as a gift, and they described it, and it was the same horse I saw.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like, whoa. And the barn was down the block on a cobblestone street. So I was like, holy smoke. So I realized, wow. But that's because I kept tuning into him because he was a friend. Just like we have friends when we're under the sign.
Yes.
Let's say some friend of ours decides to go to Mars or Jupiter or some other planet system and take a physical life there, and we will not go. So we'll say, well, we'll monitor you. We'll come in and tune in and out with you and give you inspiration or say hi. Or if you're out of body, we'll be there. We'll say hi to you because it's your friends, even though you're friends and family from these other places. And that's what I was doing because I know him on the other side. So it's when I was painting a painting of I have acrylic painting of unicorns in space, and they're running, flying into a galaxy. I called on him because I know he's on the other side. So I said, hey, Michelangelo, hey, buddy, hey, tune in to me. Help me see this clearly because I'm drawing something I've never drawn in the positions I'm seeing, and I'm trying to draw this correctly and anatomically correct. And when I did that, I had been struggling a little, and I even used models. I was trying to figure out how to do this without having a real horse in front of me here in New York. And he tuned in, and just as I was seeing, I sketched, and intuitively, you know, he's telling me telepathically, that's fine, that's good, move this, check that. You know, and I'd relook at the legs and really check it again and say, oh, yeah, that's it. It was over here. So I did it. And I will say, that is when he helped me to tune in and see clear the image I was seeing and the sketching. So the painting is the painting now, and it's anatomically correct.
It's pretty spectacular.
But it's like, whoa, because I'm that guy. I'm that art. If I'm drawing you a horse or a wolf or a cow or anything in the or Pegasus, I don't want some other artist or veterinarian or someone to come by and say, well, that horse is hocks are off, you know, they don't have joints there. You know, I know that, but I've seen art where they put extra joints in pictures that don't belong there. So I just didn't want that. I wanted somebody who's a kid to look at the horse or dinosaur, or whatever I'm drawing, and be able to sketch from it. And you know, they're sketching the way the horse really would look. They want to doodle and try to imitate it. And that's how I used to teach my little friends in school to draw. I'd draw a picture, and I'd say, just trace it, and then copy it over here. Keep tracing and tracing and copy it over here, and you'll get pretty close to the same picture you'll see.
And
the kids did
too. Art is beautiful. Your animal art is really, really beautiful.
Thank you.
Do that animation on the website as well with the running leopard?
That's a cheetah, yeah. Each drawing I drew separately. Phyllis is the one who makes them all come together for me because she's a computer person. Yeah, so we had a scan, right? You scan.
Multiple images.
Multiple.
So we could,
Maybe 8 or 12, I don't know how many, 8 drawings of the cheetah. It was a stylized cheetah. It's not realistically to be a realistic cheetah, but it was used to be a stylized version, kind of happy and cartoonish, but not. So they see it. So
the giraffe.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
On the cover, the giraffe looks, unearthly but natural.
Oh yeah, that's I love all animals. That's a Maasai giraffe. Very beautiful giraffes that have that leaf pattern on their bodies, rather than the reticulated giraffe, which is kind of rectangular spots and spots like that. The Maasai has a poofier little hair on his horns, on his head. They're a little bushier looking, very beautiful mountainy giraffes.
Did you want to maybe migrate back to the
angels?
The wonderful question of ETs and angels.
Yeah.
Because if you were to maybe just illustrate with a picture what goes on in these galactic meetings, who goes to them, what kinds of things are described and happen.
Okay, yeah, we have in deep space, I mean, dimensional space, deep space, though, but off this galaxy, mid-galaxies, we have these meetings that occur up 3 times a year on Earth time, if you think of years. So you get about 3 times a year. And when I'm at those meetings, I'm in my sometimes me as higher self me, because I'm in here as a higher self. And our friend Ingo Swann pointed it out. I knew that, but I didn't tell anybody except Phyllis. But he says to me the first time he meets me, he says, "You're your own higher self in here. You came in." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, I've never seen that." I know usually you go out of body and connect to your higher self, but I'm my higher self. So when I go, I usually go connecting to my over parts or my oversoul part, who's on these high realms as well. But if I'm walking around the seventh or eighth dimensional spaces, or fifth, I'm me as the higher self aspect, which is me. So the oversouls connect and put out different aspects, which are the higher self representatives of the oversoul, and they can be in different galaxies and different places. And when you're out, you can connect to all your aspects,
right.
And you'll see what your own self has been doing in other galaxies. And the over part, the oversoul, in the ancient times, the people used to call them the God selves, but we can't say that. It's the over self, because we're not gods. Although we have godlike abilities, we're not God. We're not the creator. So I always try to correct people with that. You know, we're not the creator, but we are the children of it, and we get energy and amazing abilities in those places where everything you think becomes real for you. That's how amazing it is on those realms. And even when you're out of body, you can think things, and they become there for you, but they don't always work. Like you can imagine a tape recorder, and it appears for you, but it won't really work like a tape recorder, and all the buttons are reversed. Whatever you have on your earth plane looking, like your telephone, let's say, the receiver will, instead of be on the left side, will go to the right.
You're
migrating away. Okay, so that's why I have Phyllis. She's the best. She monitors me, gets me back.
People are listening, and so they don't know you just all of a sudden went to a different level. And we're on the highest levels right now, talking about the angels
and the
ETs.
And the ETs and how they get together. So
we only have around 10 minutes left today. So I don't know how much we're going to be able to get. But this is definitely a to be continued, because you brought up something, as I read from the Olympian Starseeds Initiative. That's something I'm activating again. And also activated something called the Tree of Worlds, which is teaching people and talking to people about our multidimensionality. You've gone there.
We go there in our lectures, but we haven't done them for a while now. we gave a talk on the dimensions.
You are there. You see lucidly. Well, that's another thing that he forgot to mention for people that may not have heard him before, is that he does have the ability to be in two places at once. And some people will say, "Oh, that's schizophrenic or something like that." But I say, not really, because when he's doing things like that, they might say to him, "Go to the window. We're going to show up, and you can photograph us." And then he shoots a UFO.
Yeah, they always telepath with me with that. Well, Phyllis coined it for me, because we were trying to figure out what I was doing, because my whole life, even as a little kid, it's been my whole life, I would be telepath, I would just sit down quietly, and I'd be on the ship with my over part connected to me. I'm connected, and it's like you're in another dimensional space, but you're on these other places. So when I go out of body, I leave body here, Earth, and I'm my aspect of my me, and you could see Phyllis and I on our website, the Intergalactic Mission. If you scroll down on the aliens or extraterrestrials, you scroll down, you'll see two people standing at a giant floor-to-ceiling window, and that's me and Phyllis out of body. And you can make any color hair you want. You can have brown hair, black hair, white hair, silver hair,
right,
purple hair, whatever you want. So sometimes I got dark hair, and sometimes I got blonde tones, depending on where we're going in different frequencies. But we got tans and all that stuff. So, or gold skin, depending. When you're out there, Phyllis figured this out. She says, I'm lucidly remote viewing. At the same time, sitting here on the couch talking with you, I can connect right then and see through my eyes on the higher realm what we're doing or what we're saying or what's going on. So sometimes we have these meetings throughout the Earth year, imagining our Earth year. So I estimated it's about three times in an Earth year that we're in space doing these deep state meetings. They're galactic meetings. They're from different galaxies. And the Sananda is there in charge of it. And he's the one who was known on Earth at the time as Yehoshua or Jesus. But Sananda is the son of love. So that's what his name stands for. And he is the second. He's the creator as the second person of that being, meaning the same self. So he is an aspect projected by creator. This is the best way I can explain it to people. Who is Christ? Who is this guy? Who is Sananda? Who's Jesus? He materializes on the earth. He's coming as Christ or Jesus, so the people recognize him here.
Let's just remember one thing.
In space, we know him a different way.
Everybody at the level they expect to see him.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So when he comes on, and he'll appear as you expect him. He can sometimes have a beard. He won't have a beard, depending on whatever he's doing. But when he's on space,
also,
he comes as Sananda.
Also say that he'll never correct a soul and say, you know, if they think that he's, you know, an average, if they think he's a master of some kind, he'll never correct you.
Mm-mm.
He won't correct
you. He wants free will. He'll just let the souls figure it out later. It's okay. Got all the time they need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get close and understand who he really is and who he is, that's my mission here. Because when I came in, I was telling my parents, I'm here to tell truth. And it's truth from where I come from as well as what I see here. But it's mostly from where I've come from. And when I physically met Yehoshua, he appeared in our bedroom to me because I was changing some CDs we had going with Christmas music. And I felt an energy surround me with love, blissful love. And I just assumed one of my angels just materialized behind me because they come with that same blissful Christ love.
Mm-hmm.
I turned around expecting my angel, and there is Yehoshua appearing to me as a roughly a 12-year-old young guy. And I knew he was the Christ as the child of Christmas. He was coming through to me that way, not to be overwhelmed in any way. He was so beautiful in a white robe with a gold sash. Turned around thinking it's an angel. And I'd been depressed. I'd been crying because of the way people treat him. And so he was answering. He was coming in to help me with that because Phyllis was out on a computer and I was telling her and I was upset. And I went to change our 5D CD player. So I went to change and I was in there crying. I was saying, why can't people understand? It's not about presents. It's not about St. Nicholas or Santa Claus. It's about what he came to do, who he is. And so when the energy filled the room, not only that, it came in with flowers. The smell of flowers came in. I turn around thinking it's an angel, my angel or so, or Michael, one of them. And I turn around and I go, it's you. Oh my! And I was like, oh, like that, because I recognized who he was. And my body automatically bent down to my knees, was going down to the floor on my knees. Because you, when you see the creator, you get on your knees, basically. Your soul knows it's the creator. I'm going to the floor. I'm like, whoa. And he puts out his right hand and he takes my right hand. And he says, it's okay, stand up with me, you know. So I stood up, I had energy to stand, I was filled with blissful love, and my tears were gone. And he says, he tells me what Phyllis and I are to do. And I'm choked up because he was so sweet and beautiful. His eyes have a depth of love we can't imagine. The Creator's love is so expansive for all souls and children that your heart can't fill it. It's no way. He's overpowering with that love and that bliss and that euphoric bliss of love. So I'm looking at his eyes, and he says, it's okay. We know what's going on. He always speaks in the we because he is the creator of the Creator, the Father, Mother Creator, the Son, who is he, and the Holy Spirit, who is an aspect of the same, which is the manifestation of the love between the Father and the Son that comes through as a manifestation to the earth plane of spirit, which is still Christ, and creates those miracles, those miraculous miracles that occur, like spontaneous miracles where a person's leg grows back instantly. That's the Holy Spirit with the action of Christ who's there with Creator. So it's amazing, amazing. So he's telling me, we know what's going on, don't worry. Just be love.
We're going to have to do a to be continued. Amazing stories. Thank you so much, Mark. And Phyllis, thank you so much as well. I'm looking forward to our next conversation, either on the air or off the air. And how can people find you? You mentioned your website, but you're also on Amazon with podcasts, and you're in anthologies, and you shared today that you were editing a magazine. So what are all the wonderful ways that people can find you?
They can do Facebook, or they can just...
Yeah, Facebook is just Mark Brinkerhoff, and you'll see me with UFOs around me or something.
Okay.
Intergalacticmission.com is the website where you can see photos. And there's an email there. You can email us there. They can email us there.
But what might be even easier, because a lot of people don't know how to spell intergalactic for some reason, you could just go to markbrinkerhoff.com, and there is a way to navigate to his other site through that. Or
yes.
You can just go to Facebook.
You'll see Intergalactic Mission there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
So it's Mark with a C, M-A-R-C.
It would be easier for them to remember, markbrinkerhoff.com.
But Hercules, the most important thing, what Yehoshua said to me at that time, that was back in 1999, he said, I said, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I draw this and that. What do you want me to do? The will of Creator, right? What do we want? What does Creator want from me and Phyllis? And he says, do what you do and say what you say. And I said, but what do you mean? My truth? The truth I see on earth or the truth I know from space, which is him and more? He said, all of it. Tell them all of it. There's not much time left. And so he told me a few things for Phyllis and me, and that was it. And then he came and he kissed me on the cheek, and I kissed him on his right cheek. He kissed me on my right cheek, hugged me,
wow,
and stood back a few seconds, blissful love, dematerialized in sparkles of light. And the whole room was smelling like roses and flowers from a garden. And yet there it was winter, Christmas Eve.
So yeah, I know. The
I just want people to know that.
Effect, you know, I get that too with some of my interactions, you know, and again, sometimes
right,
in winter,
that's,
so there wouldn't be flowers, or where I am, there wouldn't be that,
right,
smell. Unfortunately, we don't have time today, but I wanted to comment on some of the things that you had shared, because I know from my life that those things happen all the time if you're open to them. So,
yes.
Thank you so very much. You've given me much to think about and the subject of tonight's meditation. So,
thank you, Hercules.
Very soon.
We love you.
We love you. And just let everybody know, praise the Infinite One. Praise and love. Praise. And he answers. He comes to you closer.
Ask what
and wisdom.
Its will is for you.
What the will is, Creator, for us.
No,
right.
Its will.
That's the message.
I love you. And here you are spreading the message. Be well, my friend.
We love you, bro.
Bye-bye.
We love you.
Love you, too. Bye-bye. And
bye.
Thanks to everybody who's been live or are joining us on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We're going to close with Mighty Elohim, composed by Linnell Griffin.